The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports columnist, the Arizona Republic, longtime observer of what is going on in the state. I think it's time for a State of the Union on Kevin Durant, because that is in the news cycle today. Whether the Suns should pursue or not, I'm of the opinion they should not. The Cardinals so far, with the what words would you use to describe this offseason, and also some Arizona State, all things with the esteemed columnist Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports, that is coming up. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Football AZ show tonight on Bally Sports Arizona, actually over the next 3 days and nights. Jordan Hamm will be hosting segments in the show. As always, Claudia Collins will have a very popular recruiting roundup. Jordy goes deep on Arizona State on the college scene with Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network. I've got a little segment in there as well. And the AZ Audibles crew of Eric Sorensen and Zach Elvira are back chopping it up. That is all on the television show, which we do on Bally Sports Arizona. Our chairman of the board steering this ship is Jared Nielsen. Let us get into this. There's some interesting stories today. I think the biggest one, there's two big stories to me locally, and then there's one that is enormous nationally, because I think the greatest female athlete ever is retiring, and Serena Williams. I'll get into that in a minute. The Kevin Durant story. So Kevin Durant met with the owner, Joe Tsai, over the weekend in London, and reportedly said, according to numerous reports in the East Coast around Brooklyn's media, that he said basically, it's me staying or Nash and Sean Marks, the general manager, going. I will stay if they go. So why do you want Kevin Durant now here in Phoenix? Seriously. Why would you want Kevin Durant here in Phoenix? He's played, what, 90 games, signs a big contract, 90 games like the last 3 years, signs a big contract. He's on the north side of 30. Kevin Durant decided, I am going to go take my talents and go play with Kyrie rather than Steph Curry. How's that working out for you? I think for Kevin Durant, the Golden State Warriors, yeah, you can go free agents, fine. We'll bottom out, but you know what? We're going to be just fine with Draymond and Klay Thompson and Steph, and we'll figure out some other pieces. We get Andrew Wiggins here, which is a, you know, a result in an indirect way of Durant leaving the Warriors. And what do you know? Golden State wins in 3 years without any help from Kevin Durant at all. Meantime, Kevin Durant is on the Brooklyn Nets, and they get eliminated. They don't even play well. You've had, what, one playoff win series since going to Brooklyn? Like, what have you done recently? Terrific talent, lots of drama, like lots of drama. You know what, here in Phoenix, do we really need lots of drama? I think it's a pretty good situation now after the decade of decline, the decade of darkness, all of that that we had to put up with. Now things have headed in the right direction. The general manager is stable. The head coach is very stable. You've got a young superstar coming into his own in Devin Booker. You have an aging point guard who is beloved around the league, who's played very, very well. You have, I don't want to use the word malign, but there's just something around DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams. I don't know what it is. But for now, he's here until next January. And I think at that point in time, the Suns will probably say, yeah, see how this works out, and we'll just dump you. After the contract deal, you can't move him until next January at the earliest. So, you know, you put everything together, and it's really, you're going to gut the roster for a guy that's not happy, for a guy that actually goes to the owner and says, yeah, get the coach out of here, get the GM out of here. Who's to say that he doesn't come here and say, I don't want to play with that guy, get that guy out of here and get that guy out of here? Who's to say? And who's to say that Kevin Durant coming here is suddenly going to turn everything in a positive direction? It's already positive. What happened last year, is Kevin Durant going to be the missing piece? I mean, it sounds great, but man, when you see the drama and just the constant, I want the coach out. That was his coach. That was his dude. That was his guy. So why exactly would Kevin Durant be a good fit here now? And I think this latest bit of news to me says, because if he comes here and pulls any sort of the same nonsense, and is this Kevin Durant being calculated and saying, I'm going to make it impossible? You know, Brooklyn's not moving me. I know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm going to meet with the owner, and then I'm going to leak it to the media, and then it's going to be impossible. And opening day, when Steve is out on the court and about right around practice, hey, man, so Kevin doesn't want you here. How do you feel, Steve? And maybe Steve Nash is just in the wrong space at the wrong time. This is Steve Nash's first head coaching gig. So, yeah, Steve was a consultant up in Golden State. He's a two-time MVP. That doesn't necessarily mean that it equates to being a good head coach in the NBA, does it? I mean, Steve was a terrific player, saw the floor, saw the court, but it doesn't always mean that he reacts instantaneously or that he's there yet. Like Jason Kidd, when he broke in as a head coach, is he better now? You know, Mike Budenholzer is up in Milwaukee winning a championship, and there's people that question him. He was in Atlanta, he cut his teeth there, goes to Milwaukee, they win. Sometimes you need to go through another job or two. Maybe it's in Steve Nash's best interest today to just walk in and say, I think I'm too well to attend. There's always going to be, there are always guys out there. Mark Jackson is out there. Mike D'Antoni is out there. There's guys out there that would say, yep, you know what, Terry Stotts. Those are names that are out there that would walk in if Steve Nash said, if you guys want to have Kevin here, I don't think Steve is going to struggle to make the mortgage if he walked away. Like, really, why would you want to be a part of such a bleep show if you're Steve Nash? They're the ones that thought bringing Kyrie in and then his vaccination status, and then Durant comes in, and nothing good has happened there. So why would you want that here in Phoenix? Really, why? Dina Taurasi out for the regular season. Quad strain. Doesn't mean that miracles couldn't happen if they went to the finals. Maybe. Dina Taurasi, last game that we've ever seen her play in Phoenix. Bring this up because Serena, last night, Serena played and she said, light at the end of the tunnel. I can't wait to see the light. So she knew that she was walking out. And this morning, she sent out her release that I'm done after the U.S. Open. If we're talking female athletes through the years, you know, I can go all the way back to Annie Myers Drysdale, who's here in the Valley. Nancy Lieberman Klein was a terrific athlete. Jackie Joyner, Serena Williams. And there's others, but none bigger than Serena, given the time where we are now. Like, who would you rather have as a hitter? The late Ted Williams, the late Tony Gwynn, or someone today? You know, like, it's different eras, guys. Deal with it. I think when you look at Serena and just what she accomplished, like when Serena plays, I stop. You know, if a Jason Bourne movie comes on, I stop. That's just how it is. I think that is the space where I'm looking at Serena and saying, you know, she's somebody that has moved the needle through the years, especially in this social age. So it's big. That's a big story. Big story. The big story of the Pac-12 and where it is with the ACC and the Big 12, the Big 10 and the SEC. So the latest is this. Big 10 is not going to renew at ESPN in their new media deal. Reportedly, Sports Business Journal, they're going to take north of $1 billion. And they're going to take their ball and they're going to split it between Fox, CBS, and NBC. All right, fine. That's what the Big Ten wants to do. Knock yourself out. Nothing wrong with that deal. A lot of cash. I get it. The SEC already has ABC and ESPN. They're the SEC. So I think for the Pac-12, this actually could be a pretty good deal. If Big Ten doesn't want to be associated, affiliated on the same network, same check as the SEC, what would be wrong with the Pac-12 being a part of ESPN? Distribution, 1,000 times better than where we are. What would be better for the Pac-12 than to have an alliance? And that's a word that caused problems here recently, but if you have the West Coast and you have the East Coast and you're in the same region in terms of television, then you can do exactly what the Big Ten is going to do. Big Ten is going to put on Indiana at UCLA at 7:30 at night. They're not going to put on Ohio State, USC in all likelihood, unless there's a bye week the week after. Hey, Coach Day, you're going to get back home at 11 a.m. the next morning because you're playing in primetime on the West Coast, and nobody in the East Coast is going to see you when the game finishes at 1:30 in the morning. That's what's going to happen. Purdue, Minnesota, love those games. We're going to put you on out West. Not Rutgers. Oh, it'll be great. Rutgers, USC at 10 p.m. Eastern time, finishing at 1 a.m. in the morning. Because we'll make those poor Rutgers players fly back from LAX and they'll get in the next day at midday and then they got to study and they got to turn back around and play. Michigan, I don't think Michigan at UCLA at 7:30 at night is going to happen in that window. So if you're the Pac-12 and you have Oregon, you have Washington, assuming you keep them together, and you have Stanford, a great brand, does Notre Dame look around and say, you know, we really don't want to be spread out. We kind of like our deal with NBC, but you know, if we're together with the SEC, if there's an Alabama, let's just say Alabama, Texas A&M is at 5 o'clock West Coast time. That game ends at 8. And let's say afterwards it's Oregon against, Oregon versus Duke. Duke's not the biggest draw in the world, but it's ACC following an SEC game. There's going to be an audience. It's going to be an audience. The better way to look at it is noon or 12:30. 12:30 West Coast, 3:30 on the East, Texas A&M, Alabama. At 3:30, you have Arizona State playing against Florida State. Primetime. ESPN. About a $1 billion, maybe less. I don't know. But that's a pretty good deal for the Pac-12. If the Pac-12 can be on ESPN alongside of the SEC, that's a win. Nobody can deny that. That's a win. College football coaches pulls out Alabama, 54 of the 66 first place votes. Did you guys watch Zach Gallen last night on Bally's? So Zach Gallen was dazzling. That's the only word I can use to describe him last night. And I don't care. It's Pittsburgh. And I don't care if it's almost the middle of August. Games, you're out of the race. 7 innings, 3 hits. I'll take Zach Gallen at the top of my rotation all day long. I think that they have a potential number one starter there, which again goes back to, what are you going to do with Mad Bum here in the offseason? I'll take Zach Gallen. I'll take Merrill Kelly. I think Kelly's more of a 3 or a 4 in the rotation. But Zach Gallen's starting to become that guy, in my opinion. All right, Kent Summers is next. We're going to chop it up on a whole bunch of things with the longtime esteemed columnist of the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, Kent Summers. That is next. All right, as promised, Kent Summers is with us, columnist at the Arizona Republic, azcentral.com. It has been a while since we have chopped it up. And we've been able to track Kent down. Nice of you to jump on board. And I just want to get right into the news of the day. We'll start here. Do you want Kevin Durant in a Suns uniform now,
Kent? You know, I did when all this started. You know, I was allured by it as anybody with that starting lineup of, you know, of Booker and Chris Paul and Durant and DeAndre Ayton, if they could keep him. But the longer this goes on, I'm at the point now, I've got Kevin Durant fatigue, and I'm, you know, with this recent development of it's either me or the GM and the coach, I say, get out of it. Stay with what you've got. I'm all for the Suns as they're built right now. Forget Kevin Durant.
I mean, the way that it looks from my view, he's played 90 games since he's been in Brooklyn. They've won nothing. He chose Kent. I want to be with Kyrie Irving, not Steph Curry. He chose it. And now he wants to fire the coach and he wants to fire the general manager. And I'm looking here and you've been here, you've seen it. This is a pretty good setup that's going on right now with Monty and James Jones. Yeah. Why would you do this?
Yeah, just because it's Kevin freaking Durant, you know, and he can still be great, as we saw in the recent Olympics where, you know, he went a large way in carrying that team to the gold medal. I mean, they went to him in clutch time. He was the guy. I can see it. But also, I'm like you. It's like, what is he now, 34 years old? He breaks down. And maybe more importantly, he doesn't seem to be happy wherever he goes.
Right.
You know, just a few months ago in the middle of the season, he was defending Steve Nash and saying anybody who thinks, you know, what's going on is that it's Steve Nash's fault, is misguided, da 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 da. And then, you know, and now here we are in early August, and it's either me or Steve Nash. That's the ultimatum. I get that the Nets, to a large extent, are dysfunctional, and maybe it's not what you thought it was going to be, but your job is to turn that around. Yeah. That's why they signed you to make it work. And the longer this goes on, the more, I don't know, disgust I have for the whole situation. And I agree. It's just like your sons. Yeah. They've got maybe some issues internally that they need to work out, you know, the whole DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams thing, et cetera, but it's still the good ship lollipop compared to the Nets. And, you know, why do you want to bring in a potential problem?
Yeah, and I've kind of taken a step back and said, all right, if I'm Robert Sarver, and I don't know how much say he has with the investigation, if that ever comes to a conclusion, but is there anybody in the ownership circle that would say, this would be a great idea? I mean, I'll even go to Fitz on this one, because I think there's some stuff behind the scenes that he's probably saying, yeah, let's do this or let's not do this. And we're just at a point today where I'm with you, and let's pull the plug on this and move on. Let's go from there over to the Cardinals. So, you know, the police blotter stuff, I don't want to underestimate it. There's been entirely too much. It's been embarrassing the last few weeks from my view. I'm just curious, the Kyler Murray thing, just from your perspective, I thought of you immediately. Like, he's covered a lot of things and he's seen a lot of goofy stuff. But the contract and where it is, it's a few weeks removed now. Have you had some time to process it and maybe reflect on this whole deal that went on with his contract?
Yeah, they botched it so badly. It reminded me of how they tended to do things under Bill Bidwell all those years. It seemed to be always something in training camp, or a player being treated this way, or a holdout, or some contract squabble, which a lot of it, you know, Bill did for his own amusement, it seemed like at times. And, you know, this whole thing, it was needless to happen. It was an unforced error. It's like, why put that in a contract, and why accept it if you're Kyler Murray and his agent? I think they can move past it. I really do. I think the message has been sent. And the other part of the contract that I haven't paid as much attention to in print, and other people haven't, is they're paying him $8 or $9 million over the life of the contract to show up in the offseason to work out in Tempe instead of Dallas. That's a significant move, I think, and it tells you what the team, you know, was maybe unhappy with, that he wasn't here enough in the offseason. But I think they can move past it. I think maybe if this makes Kyler a little more self-aware about how people perceive him, or what he's putting out there is his personality, then that will all be good. You know, we've seen him do some things recently. He red and white scrimmage. He stayed longer than any player to sign autographs. You know, kid had his jersey taken during the event, his Kyler Murray jersey autograph taken. The Cardinals and Murray stepped up, got him an autographed jersey. So, you know, I think they're self-aware enough to know that, you know, I'm not saying they did it for it to repair his image, but it certainly didn't hurt.
Sure. Sure. No, I felt the same way on that. How would you sum up the Cardinals 2022 from the end of the Rams game to now? What would be the word or two or phrase you would use?
Tumultuous is a word that comes to mind. Newsworthy, certainly. I mean, you start with Super Bowl Sunday when, you know, there were leaks on both sides about how the team felt about Murray, how Murray felt about the team, the agents, you know, all caps, single space statement, you know, the basically, you know, having a referendum on the Cardinals. You know, if they really want to win, they'll extend Kyler Murray now. You know, through the, you know, and then Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim get extensions right around the combine in late February that no one saw that coming, and then this whole training camp. You know, I think it's settled down now, but that first week to 10 days of training camp with the Kyler Murray situation, with Hollywood Brown getting clocked at 126 miles an hour on the 101, to, you know, the running backs coach James Saxon stepping away for, you know, domestic violence accusations. You know, as Cliff Kingsbury said recently, he says, you know, as an organization, we've got to handle our business better. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a telling quote.
And they had the death of a player here in the offseason too. And
yeah, and that's obviously the bigger thing, you know, in the whole scheme of it. The rest of it's just squabbles, but that's you know, real life devastation to a family or to two families.
And you had DeAndre Hopkins getting popped for PED. It just feels like, and then on draft day, because of the Hopkins thing, they end up getting Hollywood Brown, and then you're not sure if Rodney Hudson is going to continue to play.
It's been a columnist dream. It's been a sports writer, sports caster, columnist dream. Keep it coming.
But can this all be put to the side to win in a big way? Do you think, because I'm sitting there, I saw you a couple weeks ago, and I'm watching Zach Ertz walk in, and I'm like, that dude's a leader, and that's been the reputation of Zach Ertz. And J.J. Watt is there, and I think that's a definition of a leader. Whether he can hold up with his body, that's another question. Same thing with Ertz. I mean, there's some parts of this. Buda Baker walks in, and there's no question he's a leader. Like, on one hand, I'm seeing really good, solid NFL leadership guys. And on the other side, just nonsense after nonsense. And I'm wondering if it's just because we're not to Patrick Mahomes on game number one, that all this stuff is floating around, and does it carry over? DeAndre Hopkins missing the first 6 weeks, to me, it's not a big deal for his body. It's a big deal what he did, in my opinion. But for his body, they're going to need him in December and January. So I'm curious, from your view, can all this stuff be put to the side, or are these stories, distractions, can they carry over?
I think they can. I don't know that they will, though. I think the only one that would concern me if I'm the Cardinals carrying over is, how do they play in those 6 weeks without DeAndre Hopkins? Mm-hmm. Because we saw what that looked like a year ago, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't the only reason they lost five of their last six games, but it was a big one. That offense was different without him in the lineup. And can they survive a schedule that, you know, early starts out with Kansas City, the Raiders, and the Rams, you know, in the early weeks? Can they survive those six games and not be out of it by the time DeAndre Hopkins comes back? And then, you know, bigger, just the football stuff, you know, are they deep enough at cornerback? Where's the pass rush going to come from? Those are still two big concerns of mine. I think in the fall, as they start lining up for the Chiefs, you know, we'll forget about the contract squabble with Kyler. We'll, you know, forget about Hollywood Brown going 126 on the 101. But, you know, how that offense functions, and if they can get any pressure on Pat Mahomes in the first week, those will be the bigger issues, I think.
Yeah, to me, it's Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons. Come on, guys. Your first round picks, and this is
– and they're at different stages of their development. They need Isaiah Simmons to be a star, right, and they think he's going to be. They need Zaven Collins to just be a good player, to just fill a role and be reliable. And he doesn't have to be great this year in his second season. He just has to be reliable and know what he's doing. And that would be a big leap from last year. If they get that from those two guys, okay, if J.J. Watt stays healthy, maybe that's something we're not paying enough attention to. If he can put in a full season, then the concerns about the pass rush are alleviated at least a little bit. But those are all big ifs.
Okay, so the Kyler, I just want to touch on this one last time. Do you believe that when he does have the game that's not very good, because they're going to have games, that the public opinion on this is needs to study more, this is why they put it in there, we don't believe in him? And if they don't have if they do revert back, I should say, to a slow ending to the season as they did last year, it's going to reflect on Cliff once again. Even with a contract extension, I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is safe in this organization.
No, I don't know that he's on the hot seat, but certainly, as we've seen all across professional sports and in the NFL, having a 4 or 5 year contract doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right.
You know, if you struggle again at the end of the season and say you don't make the playoffs, and he's not making enough where I think, you know, it'll cause Michael Bidwell to have any great pause. I mean, I don't know what Cliff Kingsbury makes, but I imagine it would be on the lower end of the NFL coaching list. So, but I don't think he's in trouble either. I do think this is a commitment from Michael Bidwell that he thinks they're on the right path. But it was, you know, it's a gamble on his part. There's not a whole lot of evidence that, you know, I just have so many questions about what they did in this offseason and at the positions they didn't address. I just think it's going to be hard for them to get back to 11-6 in a playoff berth.
Especially in the NFC West.
Especially in the NFC West. Although what they've got going for them in the NFC West are the 49ers. Do they really believe in their young quarterback? That's a big change there with Trey Lance now taking over, and Seattle doesn't have a quarterback, basically. I mean, they're going to go with who? Geno Smith? Is the division really that hard anymore outside of the Rams? You know, there are question marks there. You know, you could argue, you know, the Cardinals have the second best quarterback in the division. There's not really an argument with that right now.
Right. No, I would agree with you on that. Kent Summers with us for a few minutes. AZCentral.com, AZ Central Sports, the Arizona Republic columnist. So we chop it up. You were over at Arizona State last week, I saw, and I'm, you know, the term always something university is slowed down somewhat, the Pac-12 being in a state of flux in terms of media and with UCLA and USC apparently moving. I say that with UCLA, that still has to be figured out in October from the UC system. But how do you approach that team as a columnist coming into this season? Because so much has been said and written that Herm needs to go and now Ray needs to go. Where are you at on that with ASU?
Yeah, and I've written many times that Herm needed to go, and I'm a little bit incredulous that he's still there. I don't, you know, I think it has to be the only way he has kept his job is he has a friend who's an athletic director and the president still believes in him. You know, it's inconceivable to me that you could be investigated by the NCAA, an investigation that costs five coaches basically their job, your coaches, and you can keep your job by saying what I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
But it hit me, you know, too, when they had their first media day with the returning players and a lot of those guys who decided to stick around, Michael Matus, Ladarius Henderson, you know, Case Hatch, guys like that who have spent time in the program and energy and decided to stay. And they're very, really bright young people. You know, I kind of thought there's a real dichotomy there between what's going on in upper management and those players who are trying to make it work. And for them, you hope it does. I mean, you hope they can take this nobody's expecting anything out of us attitude. We're going to show them and turn it into something. You know, for their sake, I hope they do, because they were that day there were a bunch of impressive young guys in there. Ryan Clark, you know, guys like that who, you know, I think deserve something good to happen to them.
Connor Soley, you know,
Yeah.
And I'm with you on that. When I was out Pac-12 Media Day a couple of weeks ago, I was out there. So I took the train up, and you sent me a nice note about the Herm train, which I thought was fun. But I was just thinking about, you know, at some point I've got to just separate all the nonsense from the kids. You and I are both dads, and we see these 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that are just there, and it's not their fault they've been in this mess. And so they have dysfunction all around them. And I actually do hope some good things happen to them this year. It's not like I've sat there in the past and said, boy, I hope they lose. It's just they've stuck with it rather than saying, I'm going to go to the portal. The NIL stuff where kids are saying on their social, you know, NIL, give us more money, that's a bit annoying, but I think that's the new norm. But
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it's you know, and how many times can you write or say that, you know, Herm should be fired? You know, I think we've all talked that issue, you know, and hashed it out, and it's not going to happen. That's not going to change. It doesn't look like, you know, we were speaking earlier of investigations that never seem to end. You know, this is one, you know, it's taking forever, which we all kind of expected, I guess. I mean, gee, there's still, we still don't know what's happening with basketball in Tucson, you know? So, so you kind of separate it and it's like, okay, let's see what they do on the field and let's write about that.
One other thing on this, when USC and UCLA bolted, and you've heard, seen, read, I'm sure, the numerous avenues that these two universities here in our state could go, what do you think is the best option for them? Is it stay where they are? Is it going to the Big 12? Is it partner with the ACC? Is it U of A going on their own? I mean, there's all these different scenarios. I'm just curious from your view. You've been here a long time. You've seen both universities. What would be in the best interest, do you think?
I think it'd be in the best interest to stay together, whatever they do. And I'm not sure, you know, if the regents have the power, but I can't imagine the Arizona State Board of Regents signing off on those two schools going to separate conferences. And changing history, so dramatically. So I do think they need to be proactive. And I don't think ASU has really ever been proactive under the, you know, Michael Crow, Ray Anderson regime. This is an athletics model that Michael Crow likes, you know, the, every man for himself, get out there and get the money. And, you know, he doesn't believe in paying coaches a fortune. I'm not a big fan of NIL, et cetera. But I do think you've got to protect yourself. You've got to make those calls. You've got to work it. You've got to see what's available to you. I mean, you can't go back to what would become the old border conference. You know, I don't think if that's who you are, you know, I asked an ASU fan the other day about what's going on. And he goes, well, you know, the people in charge don't seem to care. So I'm not going to care either. Why should I devote my time and energy and everything when they don't seem to care about having a big time football program?
Yeah. And I've heard the exact same thing as you. And where Michael Crow was the staunchest defender of Larry Scott and the Pac-12 network. And so I just have to take that and say, you are so wrong and so far off base and so out of touch with reality. And why am I supposed to trust you to lead in this? But he and Gene Block are the two longest serving presidents in the Pac-12. And so I have to look at those two and say, they're going to have a voice in whatever is going to happen here in the future. And I just kind of say, all right, let's see how this turns out. So.
The Big 12 makes a lot of geographic sense. You know, and you could build some rivalries there, you know, if you have the two Arizona schools and then, you know, you have BYU and if Utah joins and, you know, and maybe Texas Tech is, you know, maybe that makes some sense. It's kind of interesting. It's been so quiet on all those fronts the last couple of weeks. Maybe it's because they're negotiating TV deals. And let's face it, it's what does ESPN and Fox want to happen? Because that's probably what's going to happen.
Right. And you could make the argument that, look, the NCAA is in the business of running tournaments, March Madness, baseball, softball. Yeah, we'll get into a seat at the table for the CFP when it expands to 12. But we're going to take Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Arizona, and even Gonzaga in basketball, and we're going to form a basketball deal. We're going to make a lot of money. We're going to still make money in football, but we'll be like Cincinnati at the table. I just don't know if there's enough people that will get out of the, well, football is king, which I get, you can make that argument. But I think, Kent, there's a business model there that would benefit a lot of these schools by saying, okay, you guys are chasing all the football. Let's go chase basketball. And for Arizona State, you're playing Kansas. You're playing North Carolina in football. And you're also playing them in basketball. And you'd win. So it's I think that those three conferences together make a lot of sense. And the business side, from what I've heard, that is one option. And
we're taking steps, I think, to whatever you want to call it, a super conference, a super division, breaking big time college football off of the NCAA and having its own entity and having a commissioner that runs it, et cetera. And maybe that's the way we need to go, is quit pretending like it's like every other sport on campus when it's not.
Right. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate chopping it up with you. It's good to see you. Glad you're well. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Here is Kent Summers. You can find all of his content at AZ Central Sports, azcentral.com, the Arizona Republic. And we're back with more after this time out.